My name is Dan Williams, and Jerry, my wife, and we are the Metro Leaders for the Navigators in Oklahoma City. But all that is as it is. I'm the CFO for former Governor David Walters and his power development business, and Jerry is a medical assistant at the Huff Ear Institute. So we have two full-time jobs, plus. We're privileged to be able to talk with you tonight about our workshop. So you want to say?
The most important thing, though, is we both have those full-time jobs, but that we love Jesus Christ, and we want other people to love him, too, and to be able to share that with your friends.
Making friends. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. Dr. Jerry White and Mary wrote a book together, and the picture of it is on the front of your outline, and it's called To Be a Friend. And we're going to share with you some of our most favorite quotes from Jerry and Mary in the book and some things that we've learned about friendships. And so at the end, then we'll do this little project together. What are the goals? Well, we have three goals. One is to understand the importance of Christ-centered friendships. Two is to consider your needs and your contribution in any given friendship. And then thirdly, to understand how to develop and sustain lifelong friendships. We're going to hopefully talk about those things tonight. And I put a copy of Webster's definition in here, and I'd like to read that with you, which this is a definition of what is a friend. A friend is one attached to another by affection or esteem, a favored companion, having a bond of mutual affection. I don't know about you, but I find that definition absolutely flat when it comes to being a friend and initiating friendships. We were thinking about, well, what is really a friendship? So we pulled a couple things out. One is our examples tonight, many of them are going to be from the life of Jesus Christ, because we found in Mark 3:13 and 14, and Jesus went up to the mountain and summoned those who he himself wanted, and they came to him, and he appointed 12 so that they might be with him and he might send them out to preach. Well, Jesus gathered friends around himself. We're going to use some of the things that we've learned and observed in the scriptures to talk about friendships, how to start them and keep them and sustain them. But Jerry gives us a really good definition of friendship. And he says that most of us see friends through the lenses of our past relationships, both positive and negative experiences. That's our filter. Our filter is how we think about friends. It's how we interpret our needs and how we initiate towards friends. It's a filter from which we have collected because of our past experiences. And he goes on to say, and the desire of our hearts to know and be known. So friendship involves, I want you to know who I am. And I want to know who you are. You won't find automatic solution for making and keeping friends. Friendship takes effort. They hold a bit of mystery. They can't be manufactured. They are priceless. A friend can be one of the greatest spiritual and emotional treasures of our lives.
One of our favorite speakers uses a line as he opens his tape and he says, we really do need each other for the sharing of it all. In 1 Corinthians, it talks about the body of Christ, and it says that we are a body. And it says, you know, if we were all the eye, where would the hearing be? It says, for even as the body is one, and yet has many members, and all the members of the body, though they are many, are as one body, so also is Christ. But now God has placed the members, each one of them, in the body just as he desired. And that's why we really need each other. We're not meant to be islands. We are interdependent. That rules out independent spirits. Friends help us establish the meaning and our fit within the body of Christ. Jerry says that each of our friends has contributed to the person we have become. We are a product of our families, our times, and our geographical roots. But friends mark us in profound ways. They alter our thinking, our actions, our desires, our ambitions, for good or bad. I'm sure you've all heard the verse, Proverbs 27:17, as iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. Hebrews 10:24 and 25 is one of my favorite verses. It says, and let us consider how to stimulate one another to love and good deeds, not forsaking our assembling together as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day drawing near. Recently, I've come across a new way to encourage and stimulate using today's technology, and I'm kind of tickled about it. How many of you use the YouVersion Bible on your phones? If you notice, they have a little thing called Notes. They also now you can make friends. Just like on Facebook, you can have friends. And if you put a note in your quiet time from something you've been reading and you add a note on YouVersion and you mark it friends, then everybody who's one of your friends gets to see what God said to you today. I didn't realize the value of that. I just started doing it because I thought, oh, this is kind of cool, and I didn't know that people could actually see it. And one day, out of the clear blue, I got this comment back from one of the girls I used to disciple, who was an OSU student, that now lives in Louisiana. What a blessing. All of a sudden, I realized, and then I started asking people to start responding and to make me their friend so I can see what they're doing in the Word and see how God's speaking to them. It builds our friendship. Even though we could be miles away, we're developing, how do we minister to each other? How do we encourage each other to love and good deeds, no matter where we're at? Anyway, so that's one of the things that are really encouraging to me.
Being a friendship catalyst. And when we were thinking about being a friendship catalyst, what we're talking about is, what are the elements that you bring to the table and need to be involved as you begin to start approaching, thinking about, and reaching out to people? What are the elements, the catalytic elements? You put two chemicals together and there becomes a reaction. And so that's what we're thinking about when we think about being friends. As a catalyst is it's going to, what's your name?
Ryan.
When Ryan and I begin to start connecting as friends, there begins to be a creation of some stimulation there. In Hebrews 10, 24 and 25, as Cherry quoted it, in the King James Bible, it says, let us consider how to provoke one another. Let us consider, well, provoking and stimulating, in my view, are not nearly the same kind of words. When I provoke someone to anger, we think about it normally in those kinds of terms. Provocation there becomes a bit stronger than just stimulating. We stimulate one another, we provoke one another, we challenge one another. And so being a catalyst to create friendships or stimulate friendships, these are the things that Jerry has mentioned that we think are really good things to think about. First of all, as friends, generally, people connect with friendships because of some sort of attraction. And it can be physical attraction, or it can be personalities. When I was attracted to Cherry, it was a combination of a lot of things. I mean, I liked her studiousness when we were in high school together. And so there's lots of reasons why we connected and why we became friends. Background, common backgrounds can be a reason why you might connect with someone in an unusual way that would lead to a friendship. Common interest, kind of a similar kind of a thing. Common interests are the elements where I have something that I really like to do and I naturally gravitate to that kind of a person. We're sitting in my living room this afternoon talking to Tom Yakeley. Not a surprise to me, but I find out that Tom really loves fly fishing. And so Tom and I, we immediately start talking about our favorite fly rods and our favorite fly lines and things that we like to fish and what kind of trout we caught. And all of a sudden, he's pulling out his phone and showing me a pic of him. And I pulled out my phone and showed him a pic of me. And so all of a sudden, you know, there's chemistry that's going on there because we have a common interest. And that is drawing us together. So work or family can be. Do you have an illustration?
Yes. I want to
jump
in there about this. I was thinking. I was actually praying one morning this week when I was getting ready for work. I said, Lord, give me some things that I remember from collegiate days, which was a long time ago. But I remember really clearly some of the fun things that people initiated with me to work on being friends, because I was a freshman. Knew at OU, didn't know a soul, and I mean, I didn't know a soul. I was from California. And a group of us we just made it a habit. Everybody on my floor, it was a very small floor, there were only 9 of us on the floor, 6 of us ate dinner together every night. We just made it practice. And by the end of the semester, we were really good friends. Another friend would call and say, Cherry, let's go out on the Oval and let's listen to a cassette tape back then from the tape library, which was housed at the BSU. And we'd go sit out in the middle of the Oval and listen to a tape. And then another group of us got together and we did it every, I don't think it was every night, but two or three nights a week. We read a chapter in Hind Speed on High Places together. We worked at initiating things that would draw us together. But those are all things we can do. Today, Dan and I do things a bit differently. We have yet to read a book with a group of people, but we do Bible studies with them.
We read this one together.
You and I read this one together. We did. And I'm a reader. Dan is not. So that was a real test of our endurance. But we take people. We have a jet ski, and we take people to the lake, and really have built some fun times together with people, both singles and married people with kids. We go camping, and sometimes there's four different families camping together. And so anything you can do like that, it doesn't always have to be something serious. Make it fun, don't be afraid to initiate, and have a blast doing it.
Yeah, those are great examples. Luke 2:52, and Jesus kept increasing in wisdom and stature and favor with God and man. That's useful because of the way Jesus developed in his own life. He developed physically, so there are elements that we do in our life. Jerry and I like to walk our neighborhood, and so when we're out walking, then we'll bump into a neighbor and have a chance to talk with them. You perhaps may play basketball, or you may be involved in a church group meeting, or you may have someone that you go to Starbucks after class or something with, whatever the contexts that you are, that you enjoy doing together. A lot of Cherry's and my friends these days is stimulated by our life purpose. We love what we're doing with the NAS. We love this idea of spiritual generations of laborers that are making disciples amongst nations. And so a lot of our friendship connections with people are about this because we really like to talk about it and it's so much a part of our lives. And so it becomes a little bit infectious. And so we get a chance to share that. And so that is one of the life circumstances of our lives. So think about those dimensions if you need some places to go at. Jesus increased in wisdom. That's the intellect. So that's right where you guys, many of you are at. You're at a place of higher learning. You're studying. And so that becomes a point of common interest. And so you can think about some of those others. Circumstances or life circumstances are another great way to connect with people. There are places where there are common points of connections. If you have life circumstance would be a college student. You have that in common, so that's a great example. Or you may have had a death in your family that you can relate to another person. Or there may be some life circumstance which you can discover from your friend, and you can then relate to that in some way. So some sort of life circumstances. You heard Tom talk about connecting with people where they live, work, and play. That's something we a lot of times talk about with people in the business world, because that's, if you're not going to find them at church, then you're going to find them, business people, in one of those places where they live, where they work, where they play. So we're out in our neighborhood and we're connecting with neighbors as we're walking. We have a Christmas party that we put on for our neighbors to come at Christmas time, and so they're in our home. And so we try to be as creative as we can about that. We attend a homeowners association, and so we're finding different ways that we have common connections with people, and you can discover those for yourself. Intentionality. Someone must initiate, be there when you're needed, and no friendship is a one-way street. This is important because friendships are created because someone is reaching out. But friendship is a mutual thing. It has to be two people. So you have to be prepared in the event that you extend friendship to someone and it's not reciprocated or they don't receive it. And so that's a part of willing to be a catalyst for a friendship, is if you've reached out and you've extended friendship and you've served or you've communicated or you've listened in some unique way and they just simply have not responded, then. Yeah.
How many of your our students living in the dorms? Yes, good. Praise the Lord. That's where I love it when students live in the dorms. One of the things that I remember that was just really helpful was back all those many years ago, cafeterias were set up quite differently. But I decided one day I was tired of being lonely. I was done with it. And I went downstairs, went to dinner, sat down at a table, and I decided whoever sat down next to me, I was going to talk to them, period. I was going to introduce myself. Well, that ended up being the friend who would invite me to go sit out on the oval and listen to a tape. Connected immediately, just like that, got open doors. But don't be afraid to be the initiator. There was I was looking to see if she was here, a young student friend of mine who goes to UCO. This week, she posted a picture on Facebook. She walked up to a student in the library that she had never met before from a different country and introduced herself. He gave her his glasses and said, here, put these on. I want to take a selfie with you. And she put on his glasses and they took a picture and they've been buddying around all week long just because she wasn't afraid to introduce herself and she's made a new friend. So don't be afraid to initiate.
Testing. While testing isn't a part of being catalytic in a friendship, it is inevitable thing you're going to experience. And we're going to talk a little bit about conflicts in friendships and how to work through those conflicts. But being in a conflict, unless it's a casual relationship, you're going to likely have a disagreement. You're going to likely have a misunderstanding. Those are a part of friendships. Those are the things that you are willing to experience in order to have a friendship, which is not just an acquaintance or a casual friendship, but a close friendship and then an intimate. We're going to talk about those dimensions in just a little bit. But as you move from an acquaintance into a closer, intimate relationship with people, testings and problems and conflicts and misunderstandings are going to be a part of it. So that is about kind of preparing yourself. Jerry talks about mutual openness and transparent communication. In any friendship that's going to go beyond just an acquaintance or a casual friendship, there needs to be an openness and a willingness to share specifics about my life. In fact, that marks a clear kind of boundary when you're moving into an intimate or close friendship. You might mention be the...
Oh, that's just one of the guidelines that's always good in friendship is just be the kind of friend you want somebody to be to you. I know that's just another way of saying the golden rule. Do unto others as you would like them to do unto you. But be the kind of friend you want to have. And it's always on you. I guess that's one of my best rules. It's always on me. Don't wait for somebody else to come. Just start the friendship.
You know, one way to move into a vulnerable kind of communication with someone is to share from your own life experience a personal difficulty you're having, a personal problem, or some area where you really need prayer. And I've known in some of my friendships that if I would be vulnerable enough to share something, then a lot of times fellows that I connect to are going to share something with me. But if I have a wall up that is kind of indefensible and I'm not vulnerable and open and I'm not going to share something, you know, honestly or authentically, then it's hard to get people to feel like there's a connection. And so there's a risk doing that, isn't there? I mean, when you share something about yourself, the risk is that Ryan may reject me. Am I saying it right? Because every time I say your name, she laughs. So, what was your name again?
Brian.
No wonder. Okay. So, yeah. So, Brian, if I don't open up to you and share authentically, then if it's a new friendship, then you might be inclined to hold back yourself. And so that's about initiating, being a friend. And I like Jerry's comment, friends are built on degrees of openness. That's really a great thought about that, because openness isn't a door that's either open or shut. It's degrees of openness. So how willing am I to be at risk in a friendship? to let you see who I really am and not just who I want you to think I am. So when I portray the who I think I am, that's the facade that I've built, right? I'm the CFO of a power development company, of a foreign governor, of a former governor, and you begin to start getting a picture of what you think I might be like from that description. But when you get to know me, then we break down those kinds of facades, and you get to know who Dan and Cherry really are. Kinds of friendships.
We got several kinds of friendships. The first one is acquaintances, people that you just see in passing. You say hi. You may see somebody as you're walking across campus. You know you've seen them before. You greet each other. You may make eye contact, and you just keep going. You may even be in class with them, but you don't really know them. And there's an estimate that almost everybody has between 500 to 1,500 acquaintances. Hard to believe that number. But if you stop and add up people you see in class, people you go to church with, people who know your face, like that. Then there's casual friends. Those are the ones that you have regular contact with. You may be able to call them by name. And you may have thought, someday I'd like to be friends with them. And it depends on whether you're a student, whether you're in the work world, whether you're a stay-at-home mom, what kind of job you have. I see, on the average, not the ones I work with, I see patients because I'm a medical assistant. I see at least 100 a week, and they all know me, they all know my name, and I know most of their names. Now, we might even be casual friends because some of them have gotten to be close enough that I see them very regularly. I know something about their life, they know something about mine, and we talk. But we're not close friends. And then we move into close friends. We usually have a lot of close friends. Most of our meaningful relationships, they encourage us, they inspire us. They are around us on a regular basis. They develop as we have repeated contact with each other, and we engage in lots of mutual activities. We may be in a Bible study together. We may be on the same sports team together. We may be in a club together. We may be in a class together and study together on a regular basis. There is some sharing on a deeper basis, and we get to know their thoughts and feelings, and they bring lots of joy to our lives. Sometimes we have people who are in that category that we know we would be intimate friends if we ever had time. But you notice on the other sheet when we talked about things that contribute to friendship is you have to have time. And so there's those that are out there as potential friends that would be potential intimate friends if we ever had time. And I have several of those. And then there's our intimate and best friends. Jerry says that he estimates that most people will only have 3 to 5 of those in their life. They're the people we trust the most, we share with most deeply, and we depend on the most. Interestingly enough, aside from my husband, my closest friend is a friend from college. And she and I went to OU together. We knew each other from maybe the first month I was there. We went to church together. I moved away. I came back, and there she was. And we are just close. But those friendships you develop now will probably be the ones that carry you through for the rest of your lives.
This little illustration here, what we'd like you to do is to take just a moment and write down one name of a person in each one of these categories. So write down on your sheet a person who's an acquaintance, someone that you have met, that you're not particularly close to. You may not even know who they are. It can be a Starbucks or a gas station 7-Eleven attendant, something like that. And then casual friend and close friend, and then an intimate. Go ahead and take just a couple minutes and write that down. Okay, I know that you could spend more time on this and thinking about it. How many had a hard time writing more than a name in three circles? Who had a hard time putting a name in three circles or more? Okay, so most everybody got three circles or more. Okay, so who had a hard time finding an intimate friend? Okay, so
sisters can count.
Yeah, sisters count. Yeah, absolutely. Families are some of the more important relationships.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, you'd probably be in deep trouble if you hadn't, worked on that one. Well, We learned some things about through Jesus' life. Jesus had a relationship on a number of different levels. He had a relationship with Peter, James, and John, the three disciples on the inner circle. And then Jesus had a different kind of relationship with the 12 disciples, whom he gave them the title of apostle. And then Jesus had a relationship with the 70 disciples. And of course, the relationship he had with the 70 was not the same that he had with the 12. He invited the 12 to go up to the mountain and pray with him. He invited the 12 to come into the Garden of Gethsemane, and he didn't do that with the 70. And then Jesus related to the multitudes. You know, he gives us an example. And what's, I think, important about that for us is the importance of having friendships at each one of those levels, that we do have some friends that we're just acquaintances with. We do have some friends that we are close with. And so, you know, we sort of get that picture. Then we're going to talk a little bit about the architecture or building of a friendship. What's involved in building a friendship? Well, Jerry says that close friendships don't just happen. In many ways, they are a garden. Gardeners sow seeds, water, fertilize, prune, and if they want to grow delicious vegetables. But there is much that gardeners can't control. The amount of sunshine, whether seeds are good or bad, or the amount of rainfall. That's an interesting thing when you think about the nurturing aspect of friendships, is you cannot always control all of the outcomes of them. But that illustration teaches us something else, and that is we need to be patient in letting a friendship go from an acquaintance growing into a close relationship, and then hopefully into an intimate relationship. So we're going to talk about a few things that we think are essential in terms of building lifelong, lifetime friendships. So, Jerry, you're going to talk about trust and confidentiality.
You know, I think trust and confidentiality are probably at the top of the list. If you can't trust your friend to keep things in confidence, you're not going to ever be vulnerable and open with them, and so you're not going to go develop that intimate level. It's knowing that any and all communication is safe. Confidentiality is a given. We are certain that our friend will not break our confidence, not to anybody. Proverbs 25:19 says, like a bad tooth and an unsteady foot is confidence in a faithless man in time of trouble. And that goes across, you know what a bad tooth, how bad that hurts, and how you're incapacitated if your tooth hurts. If you can't walk, unsteady foot, you're down all the time. It's always dangerous. So you've got to, your friends have to be faithful. You have to be able to trust them. And then Luke 16:9-10 says, I'm just going to actually drop to 10, but he who is faithful in a little thing is faithful in much. That's key. Whether we're talking about here, they're talking about who do you serve. But that's true across the board. Watch and see who you can trust. You're just going to be looking for that. If they're faithful in small things, you can trust them with more. And you can keep going. And that's how friendships develop and go on.
Friendships also stimulate us. They encourage us. They help us to grow. They're affecting us as we're affecting our friends. And I like the idea of accountability in these friendships. Chuck Swindoll says that accountability is the willingness to answer my life, to explain my actions, and supply the reasons why. That's a powerful idea about accountability. It is the willingness to answer for my life. It may not be an infraction, misunderstanding, or something. It's the broader picture of my life. And these friendships that we're developing at this intimate level, we need to have the openness and transparency of being able to answer the question, what are you doing with your life? When you think about that idea, answering for your life, that is an idea that says, Brian, tell me about what you're giving your life to. What are some of the purposes that you have? What are some of the goals in your life? Answering for my life and explaining my actions. And then that becomes a critical part of resolving conflicts amongst friends, is the ability to be able to explain my actions and my willingness to explain it. Because if Brian says to me, Dan, I would like to know why you were 20 minutes late getting to our man-to-man appointment, if he's my friend, he has a right to know. He has a right to ask me to explain my actions if I have a friendship that's growing, because friends stimulate one another to grow. And Jerry says some people stimulate your mind, energize your imagination, and stir your soul. They might not always make you comfortable, but they do help you grow and become a better person. And so some of us come to friendships on the basis of what I can get from Brian. Not what I can bring to the table, but what I can get, what I can take.
The next thing on your outline you'll notice is fun. We've talked about that because I really want to move us towards getting towards the exercise. The other thing, I kind of got to book in this. I got the trust and confidence part. The other part is love. You know, you won't find a better definition than what love is than 1 Corinthians 13, 4 through 7. And I know you've all heard this exercise, but when you're with your friends, put your name in there. Instead of love, say Cherry is very patient and kind. Cherry is never jealous or envious, never boastful or proud, and go through that. Am I that way with my friends? And that's a question I always want to ask. Is that the way I am?
Every relationship requires energy and effort, of which we have limited amounts. We cannot do everything and respond to everyone. There is a matter of choices now, choices of who I can be a close friend with, choice of who I can be an intimate friend. I heard it said one time of this gentleman who was a pastor, and he was talking about letting people have access to him. And this person had decided that there were some criteria that he would set before he would let a person become a close friend or an intimate friend, because he realized, as Jerry pointed out in the book, that we can have friends that do us good and do us harm. There are good company and there's bad company. And so he made that a point of evaluating who he would let on the inner circle. Resolving conflicts is a normal, ordinary part of friendships. It's unescapable. You're going to have a conflict at some point along the way with a person. You're going to have a misunderstanding, and that misunderstanding, you're going to have a tool that works through it. And I like this Norman Wright comment that says, conflict is a natural part of growth in family living. Many conflicts are simply symptoms of something else. Most people do not deal openly with conflict because no one has ever taught them effective ways of dealing with conflict. That's true. We don't have good tools for it, and we're not necessarily equipping people with it. This little illustration is a useful way to think about how you approach conflicts. All right, and so on the inner side of the box, there are these styles of conflict resolution, and the light purple elements of the box are either going to be a high concern for relationship or a low concern for relationship, and then on the left and right is low in achieved needs and high in achieved needs. And what those basically mean is if I come to a friendship and I'm very concerned about the friendship, I'm very vested in the friendship. For example, my relationship with Cherry, I have a high awareness of the priority of the relationship. I cannot permit that friendship to fail. And so it's a high goal. And then on the horizontal is needs. So when I come to friendships and I resolve a conflict, I'm either going to be predisposed to sacrifice what I feel I want to get out of a relationship. That's a person who has a low achieved needs. He's willing to approach a resolution of a conflict where not all of his or her needs are being met. And then there's the other side of it that says, okay, needs are really important, and I don't care about you. What's important to me is I have to have my needs met. Then in this context, we have these conflict resolution styles. The yield style, as you can see it, it's high in concern for the relationship, but it's low in terms of achieved needs. So a yield person who resolves conflict in this way says this: the conflict is hopeless. It's inevitable. I'm not even going to try. I'm not even going to make an effort to try to solve this, because every time I deal with Brian on a conflict, you know, it's always worse than the start. And so this person yields and they refuse to even help. Yield is the next part of that. That's the withdrawal. And then yield is the idea, okay, well, the best way to achieve this conflict is to give in, because then there's some hope that, you know, we'll pacify the conflict. And so this is another form of avoiding a solution. It's to just simply give up. And unfortunately, both of these styles end up in goals that person has in the relationship are not met. And they could be huge. They could be very important goals. They could be life aspirations. They could be, God is calling me to do this. And these styles of conflict resolution would say, I'm never going to achieve my goals. And so there's a bit of hopelessness to it. I'm going to avoid conflict. The win one, the win style, sounds attractive, because whereas it is going to result in needs that I have are met, the problem is this. I'm going to win, Brian, no matter what happens to you. And so it basically says that I have little regard to how you're going to come out on the end of that. This is a really common kind of style in conflicts, where I'm going to persuade you to believe that my reality, my view of the conflict, is the right one, and I'm going to keep working until you see it my way. And that is the win kind of view. James Fairfield says, and we think this is right, he says the resolve is the right one. Jerry and I like to use the term here, win-win. Because the win-win means that I'm going to have a high regard for the importance of my relationship. I want my friendship to survive. And I recognize that I have needs that need to be met in the resolution process. And so when you work to resolve a conflict rather than avoiding it, or rather than trying to opt for one of these other styles, then you, when you have the win-win, then you're looking to, you're looking for the best solution. And it may not be a compromise, and that's why the compromise, which some of us say, well, look, if you put in 50%, I'll put in 50%, that's the compromise solution. And what ends up happening there is a solution to a conflict that may not be in either of your best interests. Okay, we can't agree on where we're going to go on vacation. We're not going to go anywhere. Okay, so who wins in that scenario? Okay, we can't decide what restaurant we're going to go for dinner tonight. We're not going to go anywhere. All right, so the compromise avoids the work and effort that's required to come up with the optimum solution. Resolving it, dealing with the issues, protecting the relationship. Here's our little challenge. We're gonna give you, how do we decide we're going
to
do this?
We're going to pass out one to every two people. Good catch.
So we're going to, don't do anything with this, okay? You're going to get some instructions here in a minute. Here's what I would like you to
Here's
do,
table.
If you wouldn't mind. If you do not have a block, stand up and face the back of the room. If you do not have a block. Everybody who's sitting down has a bag, right? You cannot look at me. So make sure that you can see me, okay?
So if you have blocks, get where you can see Dan.
Yeah, don't do anything with your blocks. But can everybody see me? This is really critical. Don't do anything with your blocks. Put them back in the bag.
There's a reason for all this.
Okay. What we want to do is we want you, now you're the coach, you're the friend, you're the guide. You're not the doer. All right, you're not the doer. The person who's not looking at me is the one who's going to build the pyramid. Okay, everybody can sit down. Okay, here's the goal. I want, if you are standing, you're going to build a pyramid out of these blocks. All right? With your friend who's going to show you how to do it. So as a friend, you work collaboratively with your friend to build a pyramid. You have 1 minute, go.
Yes, now you can open the bag.
Yep.
No, the teacher cannot touch the box.
But you might, Brian, you might see if you can do it. 5 seconds left. Okay, stop. Stop. Everybody stop. So, failure. 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 No, are you kidding me? Did anybody get it?
I thought you were a college
student. Okay, put them all back in the bag. Okay. If you had stood up and you stood up and you were facing me, I want you to go to the back of the room. So everybody come up here. Who's the friend? This is atrocious. This is impossible. You're the friends. Okay, so here, you're a friend, and your friend needs your help. We have one. Woo! Okay, two? You guys got one too? You got it too? Okay. Okay, you got it over here? Okay, good. All right. There you go. Now, little triangle, little triangle. Yep, lay the triangle flat. There you go.
Yay.
Yeah, perfect. Okay, very good. Okay, how many? We got another one over here. All right, it has back there, here. Okay, it's a rash. Everybody's got it, right? Everybody got it, right? Okay, so I want to hear from you what you learned. I want to hear from you what you learned. Quickly, give me some feedback on what you learned.
I don't give directions at all well.
Okay, poor direction giver. Okay.
Know what to say when you don't know what to say.
Okay, yeah, not completely clear on what the assignment is. Yeah, okay, what else from you guys? What'd you learn? Huh? Yeah, from this. Okay, yeah, there's some vulnerability in trying. Yeah, okay, good. Okay, no sense of spatialness, yes. Yeah, yeah, unfamiliar tasks, it's good to be... to have a little bit more idea about what the step-by-steps are, right?
He's got, okay. He's got to come
yes. Verbal is good. I modeled it, though, for you twice, right? This is a group that's not, you know, this is a pretty high-level IQ group here. I mean, so this isn't the lower end of the learning curve. I mean, so, okay. So, yeah, it was an unfamiliar thing. So what do we learn? Telling isn't teaching. Telling isn't teaching.
Listening
isn't learning. You learn to do by doing. Telling isn't teaching. Say that with me. Telling isn't teaching. Listening isn't learning. You learn to do by doing. And that's how we create friendships. Thank you guys, everyone, for coming. If you'd put the little blocks in the bag, that would be fantastic. Cherry and I will be here. I know we're out of time. If you'd like to talk with us a little bit about it, we'll chat with you.
I think my bags are about to need replacing. What do you think?
Let me close us in a word of prayer. Lord, thank you for the richness of learning how to learn from one another and to do things together that's interesting, that challenges us, that stimulates us, that helps us learn, helps us be a learner. And Lord, thank you for the privilege of having friends who come alongside and care about us enough to invest their lives in us. And so, Lord, we just give you thanks for the learning opportunity tonight. In your name we pray, amen.
Amen.